Hello.
Hey James, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. I think I have video. So do I have Fisher Sculpture video or do I have my room? Looks like we have the basement room. Okay.
Are you doing today?
Oh, doing well, thanks.
Good, good. So to start off with, tell me a little bit about how y'all got involved in this sculpture. For the Majestic Park, I know it's supposed to be the fourth Babe Ruth sculpture in the world, but tell me how y'all got involved to begin with.
Yeah, well, we try to keep our fingers on the pulse of what's going on out there, and the Majestic Park group, led by Steve and Mary, connected with us, and that was during COVID, so it was a particularly bizarre time to be doing business, especially since we count on deep personal relationships with our committees, client base, families. It's just the way it's one of our points of difference in doing this type of work, and we're also extremely selective about what we do. So the connection was made. And they selected us without a face-to-face meeting, which was really pleasing to have that happen. And then we got into, I guess, the progression of the project. So, but it was, I think they initially had an RFP out there, but sometimes we participate, sometimes we circumvent those. But we were selected unanimously to do the project, so.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the statue itself. What's kind of the process that y'all go through to do this?
Sure. So the first step is research. Research carries a handful of categories. One of them would be assembly of images, deep research of the person, because you're not only trying to capture the accuracy of buttons and uniform, but you want to reflect the personality, which is really hard to do. It's incredibly difficult. How do you reflect personality in clay or bronze? It has to do with pose, expression, body language, congruency, and overall compositional elements. So research and then discussions with the committee. What are their goals and desires? What do they want the message to be? Because the purpose of a sculpture is to create a message that goes beyond a plaque, right? Lots of people do a plaque, 2 feet by 4 feet in, metal, bronze, steel, or something, and it sits there. And the average plaque gets about 8 to 12 seconds of viewing time. Contrast that with an effective sculpture, it captures someone for an average of approximately 6 to 10 times that. So, and since it's in the round, since this is something that can be viewed as opposed to a relief, the 360 degree view gives the viewer the opportunity to immerse themselves in the moment. Get a sense of the personality if the sculpture is successful. Action, all the adjectives that are being used to create the sculpture. So, action, determination, confidence, awe, power, all those things, if effective, can come through in the sculpture.
So, you mentioned that, it takes a lot of research, going through the photos and whatnot. When you're dealing with somebody that has been dead and gone for as long as Babe Ruth has, how are you able to encapsulate the entirety of him? I mean, there's not a whole lot of pictures of his back. It's kind of, how do you get over that issue?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Babe had a decent amount of photos available. So, but what we typically do is gather literally as many as possible. So that could encompass as many as 3 or 4,000. We've started off with many thousands of some of the most notables, like Dr. J and Charles Barkley and Walter Payton. Each of those have thousands of photos available. So, and then what we'll do is net it to 300 or 400 that are useful, and then we'll net it down to the 80 or 100 that support the pose that we're trying to, achieve. Sometimes we'll use models to mimic the pose to help translate certain elements of anatomy. Other times we use the po just the photo research. But what we do then is compose a storyboard of what we're trying to achieve. And to your point, we do want the bad photos too, the back of the head, because if we don't have the back of the head or the back of the body, you can't be accurate. So we always ask for the bad pictures, the bad picnic pictures, we call them. So the pictures where that person is not the focal point, or maybe one of Babe Ruth's teammates was being interviewed and he's in the background, turned around, not even facing the camera. That's a very useful photo for us to help create the likeness. And then so that's how the research is done. That part alone is about 3 to 4 weeks. So that's probably the most intense part of the project, assembling the details, doing the research. And candidly, we try to make sure that that person is deserving of, a Fisher sculpture effort. Meaning we don't want anybody that has a terrible history or has something that's going to offend, a large chunk of folks. So we simply don't want any of our works taken down, right? So we want everything to remain. So that's the research part. Next step, if you want me to continue, I can, or if you have another question.
Well, I was about to ask, after you collect all the photos, do y'all do any kind of computer modeling, or do you just kind of
No
eyeball
way.
it and
Yeah, that's we use no technology. We do it exactly the way it was done 500 years ago. And the way it was done 500 years ago was borrowed from the way it was done around 2,500 years ago. So historically, the Greeks, Romans, and the Egyptians, particularly the Greeks, perfected sculpture. They were able to quantify certain very complex calculations on congruency and harmony. It's mathematical. Everything that you see in this finished piece is math. It's not touchy-feely. It's mathematics. So to be a congruent composition, you can't have helter-skelter in the folds of the uniform versus the angle of the bat or the pulls in maybe the jersey or the trousers or the angle of the shoe or the angle of the belt. there have to be a restricted amount of angles in a composition. The Romans and Greeks established, and this is one of the maybe five layers of compositional elements that happen around it. So the notional space of the composition would be the top of the bat to the most outreach one arm to the back foot. All of that in the notional space is analyzed from each angle, front, left, right, side, and top. We can digress on that, but sometimes it just bores people because it's really sculpture, fifth year stuff. But most folks just want to know that it looks right. Well, to get it to look right, when you look at something that's done by either Fischer Sculpture or someone else that you like, and if you say that's right, it works, that's because it works harmonically and it appeals to all of our natural senses. The harmony in nature, the Fibonacci, the whirling rectangles, the root rectangles, all of these design elements layered on top of one another are concentrated in this piece at all viewing angles. Very complicated. It's not just copying Babe's shoes and getting his uniform right, making sure that the pinstripes are the right space. It's all of those other pieces. Very complicated stuff. It takes years, and Chad has done. He's in this for close to 20 years now. So it's that incredible amount of experience and repetition, and goals of excellence that get the job done right, so everyone is happy at the unveiling and after.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier doing the clays. Do you do a miniature clay, or do you just
Yes.
kind of do a large scale?
Yes. The way we start off is conversations, and those conversations by the committee influence the way we create what we call a modello or maquette. That's the miniature. And they are the sketch without the buttons and shoelaces, but they're a sketch of what the pose will look like. And that would be under our control. And what we try to do is make sure that it appeals to everything that the committee wants, but we add the artistic elements that make it a good composition. And it'll make it an effective sculpture. So that's the first step, the modello, right? And then we scale it up manually. Again, back to the way it was done 500 years ago. We just take ratios. If the modello is 1 foot and the finished piece is 8 feet, well, everything is 1 to 8, so or 8 to 1, however you up and down. And that's simply the way we do it. When we get to the large piece, which is has an infrastructure, we create the basic frame or skeleton out of wood and piping and sometimes even some wire and things. And then we form kind of a RoboCop, we call it internally, version of the figure without any detail, just to get the basic forms and pose. And then we begin to sculpt in the major additions, which would be blousing of the trousers, maybe the shaping of the individual's head to begin the portrait, shaping of the arms to suit the individual, things like that. And then Chad will usually attempt a portrait study, which he did for Steve, actually. And this was a way of vetting out whether he had it right or not. We were actually producing Babe a little too young and a little too thin. So the first attempt portrait looked exactly like Babe when he was in his very, very early days, but it wasn't as easily recognizable by the general public. So the advice of the committee was to fatten him up a little bit and make him the Babe that that everyone recognizes. So Chad made them a little thicker without denigrating the sculpture and making it unappealing. It's still very appealing, but he's a little bit thicker and he looks like Babe Ruth. So, which is the goal. I mean, Chad commits to make everything look and feel exactly like the honoree, which is something that nobody else will do. There's nobody out there in North America or the world that'll commit to have it look and feel exactly like the honoree. Chad has a skill set to do that, which puts him uniquely positioned in the sculpture world. So, and then we finish the clay. And after the clay is approved, you go through the mold making process, which is applying rubber on top of the clay. And then to keep the rubber from deforming on top of the clay, you have rubber, and then you put a layer of plaster in sections. And those sections then become the negative of the mold. The rubber captures the detail. The plaster maintains the shape of the rubber. And those various pieces are then used to create the wax in the lost wax process. So if you think of two halves of a clam or an Easter egg shell or something like that, for the portrait or the head, those two pieces would then be joined with the rubber. Wax would be poured inside those and sloshed around 5 or 10 times, sometimes 12 times, to get a certain thickness. The thickness of the wax ultimately becomes the bronze in the further steps. The shell is opened, and then you have a positive again in this sculpture wax, this very bright red wax. That is then sometimes edited slightly, but that becomes the bronze. And the way it becomes the bronze is that wax, that Easter egg shell or clam shell, is dipped in about a dozen different variations of silica and solution to create a shell on the inside and the outside. So then you have a coating on the wax on the outside and a coating on the wax on the inside. You bake that, the wax is melted out, and you have a hollow space in between the inner and outer shell. That is where ultimately the shells that are hardened at 1600 degrees and preheated are then buried in sand. Bronze is poured in them. The shells cool for a couple of hours. The shells are released from the bronze by hammering, chiseling them away. And then you have your bronze pieces. They're welded together and then finished, chased, we call it, is the word, where you blend the welds so they're not discernible. No one can tell you where you welded them if it's effective. And then the patina is applied at the very end. The patina is spraying at 500 degrees various acids to create various color effects on the final bronze. And then we throw it on a truck. Well, we don't throw it, actually. We place it on a truck carefully, cushioned in foams and things, and take it to the installation, pull it up with a crane, and put it in place. That's the way it works.
So, you know, when you're trying to release the mold from the bronze, you know, is there ever a fear that, you know, when you're doing that, it or has there ever been a situation where, you know, it does damage the bronze underneath?
That's a good question. It's around the portrait, the face. No one can take a hammer to that. That has to be very gingerly managed, because the portrait cannot be repaired at the bronze level. You can imagine, if you look at your shirt, the angles of your shirt or mine, you can imagine if something was dinged or something, you could smooth that out with a grinder and a sander and maybe a little bit of touching up. Mm-hmm. But if there was a major gash to the chin or cheek or eye or nose, that simply can't be repaired. So we have to be very careful with certain elements, the hands, the critical elements. Chad puts a lot of effort in hands, exposed anatomy. If it's a track runner, you have to be really careful with the whole piece. If it's
Sure.
somebody in uniform, nature of the uniform lends itself to be less critical than the portrait and the hands, right? So, but we are careful. It's not a reckless thing. It's you can take a flat, soft hammer, and if it's your arm or the let's say it's the upper arm piece or the torso piece, you can tap on the outside and the shell will start to crack and then break off. And if the temperatures are right, and if the shell composition was right, dried effectively, and if everything works out, the shell drops off pretty cleanly. And the bronze is right there, and we can look at it and see what color the bronze is by the variations. If it has a tint of blue or tint, if it goes toward the cools or the warms, you can tell at what temperature we ultimately poured. We pour 2100 degrees ideally, but if it's 2150, it'll be bluer. And if it's 2050, it'll be slightly warmer, right? So we try to stay in that 2100 range, but it varies very slightly. So out of the furnace, before we pour the bronze into these molds, it has to be temperature checked, and we need 2100 plus, ideally 2150, to begin the pour. We then move very swiftly and carefully because it is dangerous. Because we do everything under one roof, right? The whole thing about Fisher Sculpture is start to finish, family owned, family performed under one roof. We don't ship anything out. We don't have subcontractors come in to do mold making or casting or bronze preparation. It's just us. And that boggles the mind of most folks. And it actually intrigues them and makes them want to come and visit and watch. And they can. We have an open door policy. We don't use magic. We don't use the scanners and the computer carvers. Many people out there are taking a miniature, a G.I. Joe or something or a little baseball player, they'll have a scanning company scan it. They'll send it overseas. They'll have somebody blow it up in foam, dab some clay on it, cast it in bronze, and ship it back. And an artist signs it. And there was really no art involved in that process. It was just purely computer technology. And we embrace computer technology, obviously, for emails and creating proposals and things like that. But we do not use it in any sense for the creative process. The way we do it is almost exactly the way it was done 500 years ago, with the exception of some of the welding techniques and some elements of the lost wax process that were refined candidly during World War II for munitions creation and things like that. So the refinement of the lost wax process for bronze casting is it's been solid for probably about 70 to 100 years. It's been exactly the same. So, go ahead.
How many of y'all are there? You said it's a family-owned business. How many people do y'all have there that are working on these projects?
Chad
Oh, okay.
and me and Denise is Chad's wife, and they have four kids. So she's the kids, two older girls have been in the shop. My Aunt Emma have actually poured and have been in the shop. They're in their mid-teens. The littles, as we call them, have not been participating, but they think they are. But they've not poured bronze, obviously. The little ones are 7 and 5. But they both know what's going on, that's for sure. They're well aware of how it all works. They can articulate the process to the detail level, which is kind of amazing for a 5-year-old, but it's kind of cool. But and they have their hands in the clay. Everyone knows how to sculpt clay, which is kind of neat too. But that's it. It's Chad, Denise, Fran. That's it.
Yeah.
It is magical. It's mostly Chad. It's 90% one person, start to finish.
So, for a sculpture like this one, about how many pieces do y'all end up with before you start to weld it together?
Probably around 20.
Wow.
Yeah, so you would porch, let me just break it down. You'll have feet separate, so that's two. You'll have middle leg, that's four. Upper leg, that's six. Probably two or three torso pieces, that would be seven, eight, nine. Portrait, 10. Upper arms, 11, 12. Lower arms, 13, 14. Hands, 15, 16. Back, 17. So probably 17 on this piece, just figuring it out that way.
Yeah.
That's in process right now, so we're finishing up right now. So I bet it's 17 to 19 pieces. Yeah, and they're cast, relieved, cleaned up, positioning, welding them to make sure, positioning them and welding them up is an art form, because you want it to be exactly like the clay. You don't want anything twisted or in a different position, so that's a critical step too. Sometimes there's infrastructure, so if it's a large piece, once we get over 10 feet, we typically, even some of the 8 or 9 footers that are heavily cantilevered, very far outreaching, like Bobby Jones at the 76ers, will have infrastructure in there that creates an added level of strength. We'll have stainless steel, solid or hollow tubes, pipes, whatever we need to have us feel comfortable with it. Because, we've had as many as 10 people on one of our statues. Ed Snyder, who was the owner of the Philadelphia Flyers, who passed several years ago, when the Eagles won, there were about 10 people on his shoulders and on his head and all over him. So we pour our bronze very thick. If you are a one of these folks that has the computer scan and has it done overseas, their tolerances are down to around 3/16 of an inch, which is fairly thin. If you or I sat on top of that, it could kink, or crumble. We pour it very thick. We pour about three times as thick, only because we know that in the middle of the night at a college campus or at a sports arena, there are going to be people on top of these things, and also weather and things like that. But we make them thick so they're durable, because bronze in the exterior lasts thousands of years. The only reason we don't have ancient Greek bronzes is because most of them were melted down for munitions as you go through the various wars in the early parts, many centuries, 20 centuries ago. So, but essentially, in the exterior, bronze lasts several thousand years. Inside, without exposure to the elements, it's infinite. There are bronzes in ancient Greece that show, or I'm sorry, in ancient Egypt that show absolutely no signs of deterioration, that have been uncovered inside the various tombs and things like that. So.
excuse me. So how long does this the entire process take usually?
Yeah, typically the we usually contract for about a year, year and a half, depending on our workload and depending on the goals of the committee. Some people are just starting with an idea. They don't have any money, so that would be sometimes all about 2 years out.
Right.
Often other folks are ready to go, are fully geared up, have their committee, have their funding, have their place. we could do something start to finish if there was nothing else going on in probably 4, 5, 6 months. But we currently have about 15 projects going. And we try to sequence them. We try to be efficient with our pouring, sometimes pouring a couple things at a time because heating up the foundry. And, when we do pour, we bring in, I didn't mention this, you asked how many people. We'll bring in a student or an assistant to help, a spotter, we call them, somebody who just keeps an eye for safety. Three is better than two when you pour. Five is too many. So there's no need to have 10 people, in the foundry. It just, seven of them will be standing in around or in the way. So the real number is three, sometimes four if somebody wants to take a break or gets tired. But typically we contract out about a year, year and a half. The actual effort in most cases for a less complex piece is 400 or 500 hours. For a complex piece can be 1,000 hours of effort, but Chad works extremely hard. We put in unbelievably tight time sequences when you're in certain aspects of it. So when you're dipping the shells, that's a 24-hour around-the-clock process. You can't stop it, right? You have to dedicate 24 hours to doing that. When you're pouring the bronze, there are certain aspects of it where you just can't stop. Other aspects of it, clay, temperature, ambient temperature affect the clay, which clay we use, whether we use oil-based clay or water-based clay. There are advantages and disadvantages to each. Oil-based clay tends to get soft and too melty when it's 90 or 100 degrees outside, and you can actually have statues that fall apart in the studio. They literally will only last a couple of days, and then they start to melt away like wax. On the other hand, water-based clay needs to be protected and has a tendency to crack if it's not protected, covered, and executed through the process very swiftly after it's created. So you can't do a water-based clay and have it sit there for 3 weeks. That just won't work, right? It has to be the rubber has to be put on it, and the mold has to be put on it in a couple of days. So pluses and minuses to both. But and we don't have a lot of control in the foundry. We can produce heat by means of the furnace, but we have a big space, and we don't really need the heat of cooling it. We can't need to keep. The shells need to be cool, and the wax needs to be cool because the wax can warp. The wax needs to go into, so once a wax is created, it can't sit around for a day. It has to immediately go into the dipping sequence, or else it can distort. You can imagine my head, your head, or our torso more particularly, if you have a wax of your torso in the round, if that shifts, if that big piece on a 15-foot or 12-foot statue, which then is probably 7 feet around, that piece moves even a quarter of an inch in the wax form, that distortion throws the whole project off. So, because it won't match up like the puzzle pieces with the upper torso and the legs and everything else. Then you have to either recreate it or magically adapt, and you simply can't adapt, so you usually have to recreate it. But we stay away from those problems by going swiftly through the sequence.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, it's good. Well, the whole project is really interesting. We feel I have images which I can't share of the statue yet with you. I know you'd love to see them, but we simply can't share them. It's our commitment to the committee. It's a very fine representation of Babe Ruth. It looks exactly like him. And I think everyone will be really, really happy. It's a pleasure to work with committee and the team on this for Hot Springs. And yeah, we look forward to the unveiling and moving on and doing, honoring more American men, women, military, and sports folks through the years. So it's an honor to do this. It's a privilege to do this. Truly is.
I appreciate it. So, is anybody going to be down for the unveiling or?
Oh, we're juggling. Probably Chad and myself will be down. I don't think the whole crew. I don't think Denise and the kids will make it, but it's Chad and myself will probably be there. We try to be. Chad's very low key, very humble. We even though he's actually just received the designation to be chairman of the sculpture department of Lyme Academy in Connecticut, which is kind of neat. Leading a group of fine art sculptor instructors to teach those that are of the highest caliber that want to learn the refined version of fine art figurative sculpture, which Chad's running that whole show up in Connecticut. So he'll be peeling back, maybe doing 4 or 5 pieces a year instead of 8 or 10. Yeah, it's we've got a bunch of stuff. We've got a handful of Medal of Honor recipients that we're going to be doing, a couple of more sports figures. We've got Atlantic City Medal of Honor recipient. We've got Jim Stewart, who was a Medal of Honor recipient out of West Virginia, and one of the last Toccoa men from the Band of Brothers out of Ohio, Pee Wee Martin, Sergeant Martin. We'll be doing him next summer. And then we have Wasilla, Alaska, Chief Wasilla for Wasilla High School, or the town of Wasilla, and a handful of others that we're not supposed to talk about yet. Something else for the Bears, et cetera. So, but yeah, we've got 15 on the books right
Wow.
now. It's good to be busy.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the whole COVID thing got people reflecting about some of the simpler values and honoring their countrymen, sports heroes, military heroes, and good citizens has all come to be an increase in just the attention to this. So it's been good for us. We're sad for those it's not been good for, but for us, it's been a good past couple of years. So.
All right. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, sure. Thank you too. Look forward to seeing what you produce in your publication.
All right. Well, I will definitely send you the link once we get it live. So,
Good deal.
all right.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Take care now.
All right. You too. Bye.